Welcome to another episode of the Ignited Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Jessica, your host, and I invite you to join in and listen to a conversation with an amazing entrepreneur who has leaned into their passion and is igniting their life and the life of others. Welcome to another episode of Ignited Entrepreneurs. Today I have with me Leo Richard. He's a personal development life coach, spiritual director, and social entrepreneur. Leo, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here. It's a lovely day today to be on.
Wonderful. I'm excited to have you here because I want to learn more about what a social entrepreneur does. But before we get into that, can you please tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Okay. So that's a biggie, but anyways, my name's Leo, obviously.
I know.
And what I do, there's a few different kind of prongs or directions that in terms of my doing or my being, but we're going to get into being and doing and whatever, and what is that all about? But predominantly right now in professional space, I focus with eco, social, and global good individuals or corporations and organizations to kind of recapture their time, recharge their energy, and really kind of scale up and improve their relationships. And just like, you know, we're facing some pretty serious things in our world. Like we've got, you know, species extinction happening. I mean, and there's lots of really crazy stuff going on in the world, and we need people in enterprise to really step up and make the difference, because government's taking their sweet time. So we just need to get the people who are at the forefront of making the change, the change makers in the world, to really kind of have the resources, the inner resources, to really make the difference, because it can be really challenging to create change in our world when we're so used to a system of, like, you know, things being a certain way, even in like family relationships. Like when things are a certain way and then there's a change, there's like quite a growing or learning curve, if you will. And so I just help people process that and get through that, and so that they can scale in their companies and so forth.
I really love what you said about developing their inner resources. And I'm assuming that that's going to be a lot of what we get to talk about today. But I'm curious though. Yeah. So I'm curious though, how did you, you know, find yourself on this mission? What was that journey like for you?
It's kind of almost been a part of my like deep, how out there do you want to go?
I'm good with going as far out as you want to go.
All right, cool. So before I was born, if you will, like for real, I'm not joking around here.
Yeah.
I remember that time. I remember previous lifetime going to the space prior to I was born, to when I was born, and then coming in and having a very specific like intention for this particular life. And I've always held this vibration or this quality or this intention of like global peace, or, you know, the environment and living with the environment, and like as if we have a relationship, like a family relationship with the planet or the water, you know, that kind of stuff, as if it's like a part of our, you know, daily communication. Like, how was your day? You know, like kind of not as cheesy as that, but kind of like that. And so I've always had this vision. Like, I mean, one of the clearest visions I ever had was when I was about 12, maybe. Just had this vision of myself as an adult about my age right now, standing in a great big prairie field, and all the grass was gold. So it was like an autumn fall kind of time. And this like breeze just kind of enveloped me and just kind of engulfed me. And the quality of the breeze just reminded me of like, it's finally here, like global peace. And that was that's been the dynamic that's always been a part of my kind of experience. And then as I think it was about 19, I joined like an environmentalist group and started figuring out how to organize events and that kind of stuff. And it just kind of went from there. And I had all sorts of things as a teenager. Like I got into a lot of trouble as a teenager and had to sort that stuff out pretty quick 1 year. And just got into meditation, like really super young age. How old were you when you started meditating? I was about 18, and people were like, what? and so I've been doing that for well over 20 years now, like meditation and energy work and environmental stuff. And I'm not like an in your face, be a jerk kind of environmentalist kind of stuff, but like encouragement kind of side of things to, like, you know, make a difference. Every, you know, step or water drop or it makes a big difference, and you don't really realize how much it is. There's this really cool book I read. It's called Atomic Habits, and it always talks about like this 1% change and in your habits to like get these great big results. So if you constantly do all these like 1% changes in all these different areas in your life, you can have some really massive transformation in your life. So it's just that 1% encouragement consistently with, you know, who I interact with.
Yeah, I love that. I actually read that book recently too, and I agree that 1% change idea, I think it's great because it makes it feel like it's possible, right? Yeah. Like when you see this big vision for something, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? One piece at a time, right? Like it simplifies it, and it makes it seem way more possible when you approach things that way. So
absolutely. And then just on a, like a goals basis, like if you can deduce or deconstruct like a big goal and like how these milestones that get you to your goal, it's like, and then you can even break that down even to smaller goals and to smaller goals and to smaller goals, and then daily kind of habits in a certain way, you can get there. And it's just, you know, the consistency and the discipline that, and where that comes back to and circling back to like the inner resources in your inner world. If you don't have that part of yourself together or healed or whatever language you want to use, that you're not going to be able to be consistent and get to those like really big goals that you've got. Like if you want to make $1 million in coaching business, or you want to really scale your company, or you really want to make the difference in the world, you know, it always starts with your inner world to sustain that, you know, discipline and that consistency. And yeah, absolutely.
So when you talk about inner resources and developing those, so are you, and what you were just saying about now applying that towards goals, do you feel like it's the healing that needs to happen, or is it about finding like what it is that drives you, or yes and yes, that, you know, really yes, is the key to, yes. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. There are layers, and it really depends where you are in your growth. And so like, for example, in more recent studies in neuroscience, there's a dynamic of like, you can literally heal yourself overnight. And it's just like, it's a neurological, say a knot in your muscle, a neurological knot in your mental energy, if you will, and or your emotional energy, and you can literally let it go. But most people hold on to their stuff, or their intent isn't strong enough or whatever, so it stays on for a long time. So like childhood kind of wounds or injuries, so to speak, people carry those like it's a badge of honor, right? And so, and you got to let that stuff go. And once you've let that stuff go, then you're needing to focus more on generating kind of more of the energies that you want. And the kind of, if you get into like the conscious community, it's not my language, but the people in those kind of circles and wanting to live more consciously, there's upsides and downsides to that. The upside is you have to live consciously, and the downside is you have to live consciously. And so things like confidence, or, you know, peace, or, you know, like higher vibrations, or what people call higher vibrations, it's you got to consciously generate those. There's so much negativity in our world that it's so easy to go back to your set points of negativity or depression or anxiety or worry or angst or whatever, and those are generated energies. And but it's so common in our world, until our world is really focused on more like positive energies, if you will. We got to consciously and intentionally and deliberately focus on generating the positive energy. Like, I mean, you can have this like great experience and it gives you this high, but it goes away and might last a couple months and like a really great one. But they usually like a couple days or something like that. And then where does it go? And you got to keep, you know, consistently generating that. And that's kind of another layer of the dynamic. And you can only start generating it when you've really worked out your wounds or your stuff, your limitations and limiting beliefs and stuff like that. Cause then that stuff's no longer getting in the way, but then you also have to start figuring out how you're going to generate the energies that you want.
Yeah. I like what you said too, about how, you know, people hang on to things because it actually serves a purpose, right? Yeah. One of the things that I help people with is something called secondary gain, which is when you uncover like the actual reason why you hang on to it does serve you. And that makes it so hard to break that habit because it's getting you something, right? So I love that, you know, that was something else that you brought up, is recognizing that, is becoming conscious of like why you're actually doing what you're doing, and is it serving me, so that you can let it go.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah. Even with myself, like I do like deep spiritual growth. It's not like for the faint of heart, the depths that you go to. And like today I even discovered something else that I was shocked to find in myself. There was like a victim mentality inside of me. And I was like, what? You gotta be kidding me. And like, where's that? What's this serving me? And it was an old childhood kind of memory, if you will. And it was serving me, getting me attention. And I was like, and it was kind of creating some other weird visibility things in my adult life and present day. And I was like, what is, and like attracted back. And it was like this, whoa, weird. Okay, gone, you know, in that kind of aspect. And it was, the benefit wasn't, you know, a positive benefit. And it was getting me attention in the wrong ways. And it wasn't like a positive benefit, but it was getting the attention, like what one seeks when they're a kid, like they're wanting attention or approval or whatever, right? But it's just fascinating sometimes to kind of dig in. And and I'm not saying that how to give people like oh no, there's so much work to do, I'll never get through it kind of like angst about, you know, personal development. Like it's once you get to a certain point, you really thrive off of it, and it gives you like a bit of a lift when you start to realize, oh, there's another one, awesome, let's get that out, you know. And then you get this lift. And yeah, anyways.
No, and I think that's awesome that you're celebrating it, right? Because I think too many people, and I guess when you first start the journey, maybe it is a little scary about what you might find in there, but I love that you actually are celebrating when you find something to work on. That's, you know, if we can just shift people into seeing it, the positive that can come out of it, they might be more willing to actually take that deep dive.
I have this joke share with my students that help people go through those like growth periods or those learning curves and so forth like that. And it's like, you have, there's six things that help your body get through those, and it's good food, fun, exercise, plenty of sleep, plenty of water, and sex. And you can mix them all into one if you wanted to. And so those are the things that like help people like get through like really difficult kind of situations. And then can, in my situation, in case of emergency, break glass, is poutine. And so, I mean, it's like the least healthiest thing in the entire world, right? Deep fried potatoes and cheese, right? And it's like, but when I do it from a place of like helping them convince my body to get through something or whatever, it doesn't actually really impact my health in any way. And it's just because it's coming from a very different place. Whereas if I just ate poutine for the sake of poutine, like I feel really low and heavy and all that kind of stuff. So it's like when you live more intentionally, more deliberately, there's a lot that you gain, and you can experience life in very different ways. Even heavy foods, you can experience it in a very different way when you do it from a very intentional place.
One of the things that I've started to discover for myself is I actually really like when I feel resistance towards something.
Cool.
Because for me, that's like shining a spotlight on where the work needs to start. And so for me, I celebrate it, and I look for it now. Like when somebody says something that just sort of gives me kind of a weird feeling, I sit with it and I explore it and I go, okay, why am I feeling resistance? Okay, that must be a belief that I need to work on. What is my belief right now? Like I love having those moments where I get to do that work. And for me, resistance, that's the feeling that I look for that helps me go there.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of people are afraid of that. Again, like what I was saying is when we can shift, which it sounds to me like that's what you're doing in the world, is you're helping people realize that, you know, that's where the work begins for, you know, your own personal good, but also the greater good. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It all starts from kind of your inner world. And like, in like a background note of what I do is like mystical activism, and the kind of premise of mystical activism is that if you do the work on yourself, you heal yourself, then that allows your family to heal, and then you heal yourself and allows your family to heal, which then allows your community to heal, and then so forth, and then goes to the city, the province, or the state or county or whatever, and then to that nation, to the world. Like it starts from like the one drop, if you will, and has this ripple effect that goes out by working your stuff.
Wonderful. I was listening to a training that you had done, and you talk about, I think it was an analogy about surfing and how when you surf, you need to lean into the wave.
Right.
Can you just share a little bit more about what that means to you and where that comes from and how that could help people?
This is the premise of balance. So in our society, we've got all these ideas like work-life balance or how to have balance in your life, and everything that I've seen out there in terms of the concept or the context of balance is like the scales model, where you have certain amount of weight on one side or pros and cons or whatever. And everything's sort of weighed out on the scale in terms of like what your move or, you know, add into your life and all this kind of stuff. And that model is very intellectual. It doesn't really get into like the deep soul spiritual level of how I define balance. So an analogy I like to use for balance is it's like riding a surfboard, and you're not removing stuff. You're needing to stand on a board, and you're balancing yourself out. And there's like this core, you're, you know, connected to your core. If you're weak on your toes, then you're going to fall, or, you know, whatever. And you got to figure out how to ride the wave to be able to stay balanced and use the tool of the board to kind of stay on. And the wave itself is like, there's all this energy in this wave, and that wave in the analogy here is reflective of your life, your relationships, your career, your purpose, whatever you're up to, everything that's going on in your life, the dramas, the crises, the amazingness, whatever's going on, all that energy is in that wave. And you can actually use that wave to your advantage if you learn how to ride the board with that sense of balance. You can use the crises, the all that stuff, whatever's going on, and use it to leverage your speed. You can use it to leverage where you're going. You can use it for all sorts of different things. And then the real beauty about, you know, surfing is you can get into that sweet zone, and you're under the wave, and you're just totally riding out this wave. And it's like, there's so much going on in your life, but yet you're totally calm, totally still, you're balanced. And if you're out of balance, that's when you crash. And that's when you hit the bottom of the ocean. That's when the wave takes you down and you know, you slam your face into the bottom of the sand at the bottom. I've done that, and it's not fun. and so that's the kind of context of how I approach balance, is learning how to actually ride the board. And that wave is all the energies, all the dynamics that are going on in your life, and how to actually ride that rather than the kind of pros and cons of different things and like, you know, ripping things out of your life or, you know, whatever. And the scale model of balance, it's like, well, how do you use, it's in your life for a reason, whatever you've got going on, how do you use that to your advantage instead of allowing it to, like, you know, take you down or make you feel negative about life or all that kind of stuff.
So any tips on how people can find that sweet spot in the middle of something that may seem a little nerve-wracking or just they're unsure about things?
Sure. I can even go off of one of my life stories. A few years ago, I did a massive life overhaul and completely reset my life. I was feeling like I'm teaching people how to be authentic and live with integrity and all that stuff. And I was feeling like something in me was off in terms of my integrity, and I couldn't figure it out. I knew something was off, and I just couldn't figure it out. So I decided that to get to like absolute clarity about it, I was going to reset my entire life. So sat everybody down in May and told everybody this is what's happening, and by the end of the summer I'd have it all figured out and da 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 da, and like really kind of intentional about it. That was my intent, but other people became really uncomfortable about it and proceeded to rip my life apart. In hindsight, it's funny, but there's an aspect of like, with everything that was going on in my life, what I focused on was my intention. With everybody trying to rip everything apart, like my support system, like it was really shocking how damaging everybody was trying to be. I even was physically assaulted. It was really just really fascinating, like psychological experience and spiritual experience. And so what I did is, regardless of what was going on, I held to a core kind of value or core principle, or for me in my language is an intention, and it was about integrity. I was like, regardless of what's going on, regardless of what other people are doing, I'm going to hold fast to integrity. And I did with everything that was going on. And that was my kind of dynamic. And for the tip out there is to really find your core value or your core principle, because you're probably more familiar with that language, but, or your core intention. And an intention comes from your spiritual self, your deep knowing what the kind of learning is all about, and regardless of what's going on, and it's going for that bigger meaning or that deeper meaning. And when you can hold on to that, it gives you a direction out, and I call it the gold thread. So there's always a thread out of a situation, regardless of how dire or how ugly or how messy it is. There's always a kind of a way through. And that's more of an extreme example of like having your life ripped apart and resetting your life. But it happens to people quite frequently, like a midlife crisis or a quarter life crisis, or, you know, getting fired from a job you've been at for 20 years, or, you know, whatever that kind of dynamics is. I mean, we're facing that in our world right now with the pandemic and, you know, all sorts of things. Like, there's constantly like big crises going on. There's a new one every month. And so it's like, what is the core intention? And then when you can get to that core intention, you can navigate a whole lot better because you have kind of a lens, if you will, of your direction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So in one of the trainings, you were talking about NLP. So are you also trained in NLP?
No, I'm not a fan of NLP personally. Like, it works for to a certain degree. And so NLP in is a form of like reprogramming, if you will, from a 30,000 foot perspective. And I'm not an expert in it, so don't take what I say as like the gospel truth on this, but it, essentially it's just sort of like reprogramming yourself. And so when I look at programming from my perspective, an energy perspective, it actually looks like lines of energy in a person's head, if you will. And there's like these little lines and it changes your way of thinking. So what NLP does is it sort of like bends a line of how you think, and it's still programming. And the issue that I have with programming is that it diminishes your ability to have free will. You don't have free thought. You're thinking off of programming of how you should do. Like, there's a couple of really big players out there in the personal development space that really emphasize NLP, and they're really staunch behind it and all that kind of stuff. And I've interacted with them. I've been, you know, even some of their coaches, the coach that coached these big players, was one of my coaches, and I got to know the intimately that kind of world. And it, there's a, so much lack of integrity that goes on behind the scenes that it was just shocking to see. And it really turned me off the whole NLP thing, because the people who are the strongest proponents in the world of it are very damaging behind the scenes. And it just totally turned me right off. And then I looked at it more energetically, and I just look at the programming lines and how it really interferes. And then really kind of what I see people really genuinely wanting to get to is they really want to get to their, in my language, like their core essence, but like their core sense of self. Who are they really, and how do they want to express that in this world, in this life, in that sense of like freedom and choice and all that kind of stuff? Like, you look at a little kid who doesn't have all the adult baggage or limitations or shyness or shame that, you know, you can take on as you get older. They're totally, you know, connected to themselves, freely expressing themselves, and, you know, connected to their intention and just exploring. They're not caught in a paradigm of who they should or shouldn't be. And then you start to get the adult paradigms of like, oh, you're male or you're female or whatever, and then this is how you should be. That usually happens around kindergarten. And then people veer course based on the programming that comes in. And not, that's not an NLP programming, but it's like the female type of programming or a male type of programming or Western society way of thinking or their family culture. And it really limits and caps what that kid's going to be able to do when they get older. And that's the kind of last, programming's the last kind of layer, if you will, of stuff from what I've witnessed over the past 20 years that people need to get through so that they can get to their kind of core essence or their core sense of self and really be fully themselves in the world and make that kind of impact that they want.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to spend a little bit more time looking into that, because I am an NLP practitioner. And so all of the things that I've seen of it so far have been very beneficial to me. And the reason that I asked is because we were talking about core values, and there's one particular exercise called a values elicitation. And okay. I found it to be extremely, it took me on that deep dive. It helped me get through the layers, we'll say, to figure out what it was that was my core intention. And since I can totally appreciate, like when you said that you discovered that integrity was your core intention, because for me, when I found out mine, my life completely changed. Like I see my life completely differently now. So I love that, you know, that was, you know, sort of the beginning for you too, is when you recognize that it gave you direction and you knew what it was that you wanted to do, hang on to, and how you wanted to move forward in your life. So I loved that.
So it sounds like it's been a really useful tool. And I guess that's more kind of the issue I've had, is that people tend to take tools and create an identity out of their tools. and like they're like, I'm a meditator, so therefore I'm, that's my identity, or I like, even I'm a mom or I'm a dad and that's my identity, and they create this kind of reality about who they are based on their tools or what their experience is, rather than like who they really are, and just to kind of fill in certain things. And it sounds for you like you use the tool for like the core intention of what the tool is about is to help and serve, and applied it in a way that was actually really applicable for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So one of the things that you were talking about also was that, you know, for you, when you discovered what your foundation, mm-hmm. and that was part of this journey that you went on, this, you know, life reset that you went on. So can you talk a little bit more about what that foundation is for you, and how people can, you know, use that as maybe something that they can start to work towards themselves?
Sure. All right. So foundation, let's give a false foundation to begin with. And so foundation is just the analogy is like, if your foundation's weak, it's going to fall. So if like your building's built on sand, the building's probably going to fall in a couple of years. If it's built in like solid rock, it's probably going to stay there for quite a few years. Now, if you're, you know, personal foundation, like our society kind of foundation, at least Western society, is you grow up, you get an education, good education, find a good job, get married, have 1.5 kids, buy a house, white picket fence. And that's just sort of the foundation that's assumed that you're going to have as you grow up. Now, where that comes from, who knows? It's, you know, it's been there for a while, but that's what you do. Now, if that's not your truth, let's say like 20 years ago, it's much more progressive society now, but let's say your truth is your same sex oriented in terms of your relationships. And so that paradigm, that foundation doesn't work very well. And you grew up with that, with your parents who have very traditional values, and you get married and all that kind of stuff. And then what ends up happening in that situation is that same-sex individual tends to try to create that same paradigm of like, there's a male and female role in the home, they get married, have 1.5 kids, that kind of stuff. They try to morph themselves into that society foundation. And so what happens if that foundation is not your actual truth, then at some point you're going to face a crisis in your life that forces you to deal with that foundation. And then your foundation kind of gets ripped away. And this is what happens in like midlife crises and, you know, different things, like say a loved one dies, like a parent or something, it forces you to kind of deal with your reality. And then you go through this like crisis and thinking about life and figuring out what that is. And then as you go through the layers of where it comes from, you get clearer and clearer on what is your actual foundation. And for some people who have really not been really connected to themselves on a deep spiritual level, that's not necessarily your language. You can still be deeply connected to yourself on a spiritual level without thinking in that way that, oh, I'm connected spiritually. You can just know yourself really well, as an example. But if you don't have that, you can get to like your 40 and your 50 and you have no sense of your identity beyond what's been taught of how you should be in this society. And that's the kind of major gap that I'm really seeing in society right now, is that people have they don't have really good foundations about who they are. They have foundations about who others think they are, and they've built their identities based on that. And I understand the concept of like your brain is we're hardwired as social creatures, but there's an aspect of like when you are dependent on others, like your parents giving you your sense of identity as a kid, or society giving you your sense of identity, then your foundation is very rickety. And there comes a point where you're either going to rebuild your entire foundation, or you're going to get, you know, like in a midlife crisis or very intentional process, or you're going to grow older and you're going to be like, well, it's too much work. I'm just going to leave it as it is. And a common example of that are a married couple who have kids and the kids are still in the house, and it's a very unhappy marriage. And they're like, well, I'm going to wait till my kids move out before I separate from the marriage, or something like that. That's a very, you know, common example of like where people, they know their foundation's rickety, but they're just holding out till some future date. And then they usually don't even do it at that point anyway, but as a couple examples. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, and I think it's really important what you said about how, like, and I was totally like relating when you were telling the story about this ideal that comes down past through our generations of this white picket fence life. Mm-hmm. And how when that doesn't happen, or you try it and realize it's not what you want, it can completely disrupt your entire life. You have to start over and really learn who you are again. I went through it myself when I got divorced. It's like, who am I now? If this is who I thought I was supposed to be, and now I'm not, then who am I?
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful journey, but it can be like terrifying when you go through it and realize that, well, I don't even think that's what I wanted anyway. So now what, right?
and here's the kind of, I think the basis of, like, there's a stat out there. This foundational piece is my theory side. And then the science or the stats facts side of it is that 85% of people who are successful, like in business and careers that are successful, tend to have either mediocre or really conflictive. I'm looking for a word that's non-expletive, but like a couple of swear words in there, and like that's very
fine.
like a really crappy relationship or very humdrum, so-so. 85% of people who are successful have a relationship like that. And so part of the problem is that foundational aspect in them is they're trying to create one thing, but they can't integrate it between the two worlds because the foundation, there's a crack in their foundation, if you will, and they can't bridge the two worlds together until they start to deal with their inner world. And then when you can deal with your inner world, then you can actually bring the two worlds together, the relationships and your, you know, career success side. Like, I mean, you're an entrepreneur, so you've probably experienced this where common entrepreneur thing where you're making all this money and then all of a sudden it's like burnt and you don't. And it's like, not flight or fight, but there's like a entrepreneur feast or famine. That's what it is. And it's like, it's because the foundations are like, there's like this big feast, you're successful. And then you realize that your relationships aren't so good anymore. And then you take your attention off your work and then you're focused back on your relationships and then your business tanks. And then you got to go back and forth. And that's the dynamic that goes on with the feast or famine piece. And you got to deal with your inner world if you're going to ever stop the feast or famine thing. And that can mean all sorts of different things based on different people, but you gotta deal with your stuff if you want to be successful and have, you know, the happiness that comes with success. Like, you can be successful and not have happiness. Like, happiness comes from relationships, and that's scientifically validated. And just because we're hardwired for relationships and sharing and story, and, you know, we used to spend thousands of years sitting around the campfire sharing dreams and stories, right? So that's where the happiness comes from. And but the conquering, like the being a great business owner or whatever, that's gives you the fodder, the substance for, you know, those great stories to have that happiness. So it's kind of, they go hand in hand, but if you don't have the foundation or the inner resources to do it, then you're going to be miserable until you decide to do something different.
So I started to get all worried when you said 85% of successful people have horrible relationships. It's like, well, so if I don't have a horrible relationship and I'm single, does that mean I won't be successful?
Well, that's the thing. How many entrepreneurs are single? It's quite a high number. I don't know what the exact number is. Yeah. Like, entrepreneurs, yeah, unless they're with another entrepreneur in their relationship that like gets it, then they tend to be single. And
you know what? And that's what I'm holding out for.
Sure. And, and I totally get it. I've been single for a while here and I've got a date, tomorrow night. Like, and I'm like, they're an entrepreneur. Ooh. Awesome. I was like, sweet. And then we've been, yeah. So
tick.
Yeah, totally. Number one, tick. And like, they get it, like this aspect, and they're successful and that kind of aspect. So there's a dynamic of like, yeah, it's 85% of people have a humdrum or really crappy relationship if they're successful. And it's crazy how to think of that, but that's the case. And it's sort of like that, there's research on that, and it's weird, but it's like, what's the expression? You can't have your cake and eat it too.
Right.
That kind of stuff. And you can, I totally believe you can. It's a, what I call a havingness issue. And you can clear your havingness limitations. A lot of people talk about it like limiting beliefs or something. I call it a having, I don't work with limiting beliefs. It's not my kind of dynamic, but what I do does tackle limiting beliefs. But so I call it your havingness issues. What's interfering with your ability to have what you want in your life, the success, the relationships, the this or the that, and that kind of aspect. So yeah. So you raise your havingness and you can have what you want.
I like that. And so one of the things when I was researching you was that the work that you do has everything to do with energy and emotions.
Yes.
Right. And yeah. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of people miss is they focus on all of the sort of surface level stuff and forget that really without the energy that creates the emotion that creates the energy or however it works, that's where all of the motivation, that's where all your power, that's where all of the ideas, your creativity, everything comes when all of that's in line. And the areas that you work on are self-awareness, vision, self-belief, empathy, and personal happiness, and how all of that really comes from that foundation of getting the energy and the emotions in line.
Correct.
And I find one of the really nice things I'm noticing, the more people that I have on this show, the more they are starting to recognize that. And it's not all just about sales and marketing and goals and, you know, money, money, money. It's really people are starting to finally recognize that this is where the power and the magic comes from. And I love that, you know, this is becoming more and more in the forefront for entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. And this goes into my equation or my formula that I used for creating the outcomes that you want, or energy and emotions and then intention and actions and so forth like that. But so if your energy is like really, well, let me give it a basis. Like in my personal opinion, I don't have the science or whatever. I try to find research and stuff, but my personal opinion, I would say 90% of success comes from your energy and your emotions, like being on top of that. And you could have the best strategy, the best whatever, best funnel, best this and that, that and this. And but if your energy's shit and your emotions are like really low, doesn't matter what your strategy is. Even if you get some success, it won't last. And so 90% of it is like your energy and emotions. And you could have the worst strategy in the world and you're going to be a success. You hear about these like, there's lots of coaching programs, like group coaching programs for entrepreneurs and business owners and so forth like that. And you see some people, they don't even have their full funnel built. They have great energy and great emotions and they're rocking it. And then you see some people that have absolutely everything in their funnel done, but their emotions and their energies are like, eh, and they're barely breaking even if they are. And it really comes back to your energy and emotions. A lot of people talk about it like as luck or something like that, or the luck of the draw, or you were lucky or something like that. But when you can sustain your energy and emotions in a certain way, and it stops being luck and it starts being part of your reality instead of oh, that was a lucky hit, or, you know, or whatever it might be. Like I can see it in my funnels. Even if my energy is great, my Facebook ad click-through rates go to 4%. If my energy is really low and I'm having a rough day, it goes down to 0.6. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. All right, time to keep my energy up, you know, that kind of stuff. And so it's like, there's a direct relationship. And then as a business owner, your business is a part of your creative expression. And so it's a key part of your energy, part of your reality, right? And so whatever you're putting into yourself in terms of energy or emotions goes into your business space. And so if you've got whatever energy, you've got whatever business. So it's a business is a really great mirror, if you will, in terms of like what's going on inside of you. So if your business is not scaling and you want it to scale, what's going on inside of you that you're not dealing with? And all that kind of stuff. It's a great way for personal development, just like a relationship is. Like if you have a relationship, it's a great space to kind of get you triggered, work through your stuff, get to the next level. Same with your business. So yeah.
So now tell me more about, you said when you were very young that you had this image and this vision of global peace. And I loved when you said that breeze in this dream or this vision that you had, you could feel it. Like again, back to the feelings, how you felt what that was going to feel like. So how does that drive you in your life?
Well, in a few years ago, I got involved in like some significant activism, that not like rah rah hate the system kind of activism, but like global meditations was one of the things. I think we had one of them. We had and there's at least 250,000 people involved. But the UN was involved, and Hollywood and Nashville and like all those people were kind of involved with it. And it was like, and so I thought it was going to happen there. And I'm kind of sidetracking right now, but I watched that movement completely collapse. And there's another movement I was at the center circle of as well. And I watched that movement collapse. So I've been at the center circle of two really, really large movements, and I watched them both collapse. And a lot of people think it's like infiltrators or political influence or this or that or that or this. And it really, I mean, that's pressure for sure. It's causing stress and pressure on people. But what really killed the movements were people not dealing with their shit. They're not owning their stuff. And then you get lateral violence. You get, you know, I got publicly smeared. It was like crazy. And this is like in spiritual circles, you know? And it's like, you gotta be kidding me, right? And it's like this, the shadow stuff comes out. And so I thought I had it then. And before the movements collapsed, it's like, this is awesome. This is going, it's, you know, we're like right at the precipice of like something major happening here. And lo and behold, it collapsed. And that sucked, but I learned a lot. I was tasked to build an organizational model for three large movements to come together and create a really large movement. I've never been able to implement it, and I still have it, and I've adjusted it over the years as I've learned more from business and Indigenous principles, and depending where you are, Native American or First Nations or whatever, but Indigenous principles, and like integrating that. And then the other thing that really killed the movements was a lack of like capital. Like if you're getting funding, you're getting it, it's heavily lobbied, and there's certain agendas that go with it. And so if you're going to, you know, create a movement, you get some money, but it's, you got to go in this direction with it, or else you're not getting it kind of deal. Right. And so the key component, like money might be gone in 100 years, who knows? But right now we've got money and we got to deal with it. And that's how our society functions. It's the greatest exchange of energy in our society right now is through money, maybe cell phones. Cell phones might top that soon. But like money is like the top form of communication in our world right now. And so you need to find a way to generate money that you have control over. And so I'm moving it into like a social enterprise space and a movement at the same time. That's kind of my objective. And I'm actually going to be kicking that off, launching it or restarting it or whatever you want to use, but this month. And really super excited about it. But I have this kind of particular focus of having global peace. And I just kind of picked a day by random. It doesn't have some weird astrological or astronomical, my tongue twister words, but like astrological kind of date. But June 2026 is like, that's the date. And I just felt compelled to pick that date. And I would love to see global peace by June 2026. And that's sort of my objective. And I've got my career in a great space. Everything's going well in personal life and everything's growing. It's like an manageable growth. Sometimes when you grow too fast, then you can't handle everything. But I'm still scaling, so I'm doing well. And then I have the ability to delegate really easily if things scale to a level that I need, that I want it to get to. And so I'm still holding that out, and I'm going to start tapping into my networks again and starting to get that going, get more visibility. I mean, the world is, I read a Facebook post today, and I don't recommend reading Facebook posts anymore, but it's like something to the effect of like, the world's going to shit, you know, that's what the post was about. And someone who's typically very positive, right? And I'm like, okay, interesting. So there's like these cracks that are happening in people. And I've been picking up on it for a while, and I have, I don't forecast like fortune tell kind of deals too often, but when I do, they're pretty dang accurate. And I have a big hunch, suspicion that something really big is going to happen in November of this year. That's going to really kick things off in a big way, that like crisis kind of deal, right? And there's just like any family, when there's something that's not being dealt with and there's all this pressure building, it eventually blows into a big fight. And the same thing's happening in the world. There's all this stuff pressure building, and it's eventually going to build into like a big fight or conflict or someone running out of the house or, you know, that kind of deal, right? And so there's this pressure cooker that's going on, and it's just a matter of time, because the resources and things aren't in place to like take the edge off that pressure cooker. Like there isn't a world therapist, right? And so or coach or whatever. And so there's this I don't know, it's building. So my guess is it's going to pop in November, but at some point it will pop, kind of dynamic. But so I'm going to use that to kind of leverage global peace and get that energy moving, because that's how movements get initiated, is there's like a really critical pain point that needs to kind of be addressed. And yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
So if people wanted to learn more, get involved, join the movement, how would they do that? Because you've got my interest.
Okay. So for now, I've just registered the domain today, and hopefully this, I will be finishing building it in September, or having it built. It's called 10,000 as in the number, dot eco. And I'm just going to focus on that. So there's a reason for that number, 10,000. And so there's this kind of rolling theory. There's been a lot of research done on meditation to decrease crime, decrease terrorism, decrease problems in the world. And they notice a really dramatic drop in crime rates or terrorism rates or death rates in war-torn countries on the days that they do prayer and meditation, like 67, 70% drop, like large numbers, not just like 1 or 2%, but like significant drops in that. And this is documented. And so the kind of rolling theory is the square root of 1% of the population that you're in. So 10,000 roughly is about the square root of 1% of the population in the world. It's actually about whatever the real population number is, but it's like around 8,300 people. And so if I have 10,000 people that are focused in peace and meditation and focusing on creating the energy and decreasing crime and stuff like that, that's the kind of, we could have a significant impact in the world in a non-aggressive way, in a way that governments won't get their whatever up in a knot, or, you know, and that kind of stuff, and just focus on that kind of reality. So I think that's the first milestone. And then I have a few other milestones, but that's the first milestone that I'm going for. And to get to June 2026.
So on this site, like, so will you be organizing like global events where people can come together and meditate together? Is that sort of the idea? Or
there'll be like synchronized moments. Obviously, it's kind of hard to do something in India and then North America at the same time, just because of the 11 to like 14 hour time difference, right? But there's certain times that work well for a lot of countries, and then there's certain times that don't. And so just kind of doing synchronized things. But one of the things that I find really cool is there's, you know, these crisis points. Like right now there's Afghanistan, as we're talking today, that there's like this crisis point that's going on. And so I'd have like this kind of crisis intervention meditation where we just focus on that area and just focus the energy in that area, of decreasing the crime, the terrorism, and the attacks, and the stress and the pressure, and, you know, as well as the propaganda, but dealing with like the energy there, because everything starts on an energy level. And if you can clear out the energy, then the physical reality kind of adjusts to the energy. So if there's like a lot of tension in a home, for example, then it creates more substance for more tension later. Whereas if you clear out the tension, then everybody feels a bit more relaxed, and then there's less room for tension, as a kind of very obvious example. But you can do that for larger spaces like countries and airports, like in Afghanistan, for example, right now, but and that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, I love it. I'm really, really glad that you reached out to want to share your message with my audience, because you've taught me a lot today, and I'm really excited about, you know, where you want to take the work that you're doing. So thank you very much for spreading that word and wanting to be a guest here today.
Totally. You're welcome. Thank you for having me on your stage, Jessica, with the IE people.
I have one more question for you, though, before I let you go. I have to ask all my guests. So I feel kind of like I want to take it in a completely different direction than where we just were. And I wanted so badly to end it on such a wonderful sort of moment, but I have to ask. I can't not ask. So if you could give somebody who's ready to take their business to the next level one piece of advice, what would you suggest?
One piece of advice. Unpack your brain. Unpack your mind. Mm. So what I mean by that is you have so much bandwidth in your head, and the kind of rolling theories that you can make six good decisions in a day. Bezos, however you pronounce it, Bezos from Amazon, he says it's only one. But if you've got your head filled with conflict, relationship issues, stress at work, to-do piles, all the stuff that's taking up the bandwidth in your head, your decisions are going to be off. You're going to be making decisions on battling fires, like from dramas, you're going to be making and that kind of stuff. You need to unpack all that stuff out of your head or your energy system, in my language. And if you've got that, then you have the clarity to be able to focus on the needle movers in your life.
Love it. Thank you very much. That was beautiful. And I love what you said about the decisions. I agree. I'm one of those people that likes to pre-decide things so that I don't have to worry about making that decision later. And that helps me quite a bit. So yes, thank you very much. Yeah. So thanks so much for being here. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm totally welcome to the idea of you coming back once, you know, November hits and we see what comes of it. And you'd like to share your message more, and maybe you have, you know, more of an idea of, or you've unraveled or unveiled more of the ideas that you have, you're more than welcome to come back and share your message again with my audience.
Awesome. Thank you, Jessica. Much appreciated. Love that.
Wonderful. Thanks very much.